Hello and welcome to my children and loss presentation. I hope you are sitting comfortably and you've got a drink to hand and a notebook and pen. Let us begin. Now, I'm going to presume that you have already taken part in the bereavement presentation. And if you haven't, I'd recommend you do that first. It should be quite easy to see in the library. It's a presentation that I did. Do that first because that's foundational for understanding this presentation today. Let's look at our aims. So the aim of today is to gain a deeper understanding of how bereavement and loss can affect children and young people. Discover new ways of working within this niche area. Our objectives are to understand the factors affecting bereaved children and young people. Look at key facts and figures relating to bereaved children and young people. Learn how to talk to children and young people about death. Discover their age-related understanding of grief. Look at a child's possible grief reactions. Explore various elements of working with a grieving family. Pick up ideas of how to work with grieving children and young people. Now, that kind of looks like a full day's training, and this will be up to sort of 45 minutes, an hour's presentation. So we're just kind of going to do a little snippet of all of those objectives, but you might want to go and do some more reading or some different training to learn more about that. So this presentation is really useful if you have children or you have influence over children in the community in which you live. And sometimes I will speak to you as if you are a parent or carer, because I think we need to practice what we preach. This presentation is also essential if you work with children who are bereaved, and also really useful if part of your role is to advise or assist parents of children who are bereaved. So if you're a family support worker in school as well, I know a lot of counsellors do a kind of multi-role job. If a child is bereaved, then so is the family, which is often why support is needed, because the parents can't see the wood for the trees, so to speak. And when I say parent, I am referring to any caregiver. And as normal, any case studies I give have been anonymised. So a little bit about me first, who is giving this presentation to you today. So I'm Nicola Hughes. My first placement was with the bereavement charity. I've worked with bereavement children and their families since 2010. I deliver extensive training to professionals within the community, schools and universities. I've been a group supervisor for a bereavement charity, and I'm now in private practice as a creative counsellor, clinical supervisor and trainer. I work with individuals, young people and couples face to face, online and outdoors. That is me. So just a little brief overview. First of all, we're going to start with you, as I do in all my training and presentations. It's really important to start with us. You'll learn some key information and look at some key facts and figures. Love facts and figures. We will look at how to help a bereaved family as a whole, and then finally look at the actual work you might do. To start with, we're going to look at some of your thoughts and opinions around death and children. And I'm going to show you some statements and invite you to think about whether you agree or disagree with them. Try not to think about it too much. Give your initial response and work with that. It might be worth pausing the video and writing down your initial thoughts. I encourage you to find a peer to explore your answers with, or use the Facebook group to discuss this further. So if you're ready, this is the first statement coming up. Do you agree or disagree, or somewhere in between? Children should be introduced to death as early as possible. So perhaps if you've got a pen or a paper, you might note down your score. One if you really agree, five if you disagree, or maybe you're somewhere in between. And this might be a good part to pause the video and have a little bit of think about your answer. Okay, welcome back. I'm glad you've done that. So we'll just move straight on to the next one. Do you agree or disagree, or somewhere in between? Children grieve differently to adults. If you agree with that statement, you might be putting one. If you disagree, strongly disagree, you might put five, or somewhere in between. feel free to pause the video. Welcome back, and on to the third and final one. Do you agree or disagree, or somewhere in between? Funerals are not for children. I think by this point you know what you're doing. You can pause the video now if you like. And welcome back. Okay, so lots of three different statements there for you to think about your opinions. I'm really sorry at this point that this isn't a live video and you're not really there with me, as I love hearing people's responses to these. There is no right or wrong. It's just your honest thoughts and opinions. And I love the discussion that often goes with this. So when I do it live and people are with me in the same room, which has not happened for a while, I get people to stand along a long line and people move about. So strongly disagree over one side and strongly agree on the other. And as we're discussing, people change their minds. They move about as they hear different people's opinions. Usually their initial response is to do with their own experience, something that they've been through. They will make their decision based on that. And we need to be really aware of our personal thoughts and feelings and our own experiences when we are working with bereaved families. For example, going are the funeral ones on the screen at the moment. If I was to answer that, funerals are not for children, I would probably be along the disagree scale of it. And that's because when I was a child and my granddad died, no one talked to me about the funeral. I wasn't allowed to go. I wasn't told I wasn't allowed to go. I just didn't go. And I think I would have really been interested in the process, in what it looked like as a child. You don't really understand what's a funeral. I'd been into church. I knew what a church was. I didn't really understand what a graveyard was. I don't think I'd ever been to visit one. So there was lots of kind of information missing from that experience. So as an adult, I thought actually it's important for children to be given an opportunity to go to a funeral. And then I hear stories where actually it's really not appropriate for children to go to funerals. So you just have to kind of bear that in mind. I would support a family taking a child to a funeral, but there are definitely occasions where that's not okay. So you can see there a bit of a discussion by myself on that last statement. So please go ahead and talk about some of these to peers or a supervisor or in a group. You'll have a really interesting discussion. We're going on now to talk about euphemisms. Now, if you have done my first presentation, we talk about this in a lot of detail and we look at it from a personal development point of view. However, today I want to look at it from an instruction perspective. So yes, not often do I do this, that I'm going to tell you what to do or what I think. Let's read some of these. So euphemisms: popped his clogs, pushing up daisies, kicked the bucket, brown bread, slipped away. You can read the rest of those. There might be some there that you think I've never heard of those. You might be some there that you use yourself. So I live in Yorkshire and people say passed, my granddad's passed, a lot. It was new to me, I'd not heard that. So I'm from Cheshire, the other side of the country. We don't really say that so much. I want you to think about the effect that these words might have on children. So as we know, young children take words literally. They are confusing, or they can be confusing terms, and it colludes with their fantasy thinking. So I want to encourage you to instead be explicit, honest, and keep it simple. So for example, if you tell a child that their grandma has gone to sleep, they may think that she will wake up. They also might get confused about them going to sleep. Remember this point, as I'm going to come back to this when we look at reactions to grief in terms of sleeping. If you tell your child you've lost their granddad, then presumably something that's lost can be found. So euphemisms are very confusing for children, and I'd recommend that you never use them. be aware of what children overhear as well. Remember this when you're doing your assessments. What words are parents using? And then gently challenge this. We'll talk a little bit about this when we come to assessments. But I've kind of discovered what the family's issue or problem is based on the fact that the child has overheard something that's not been true. Key information. So facts and figures. I think facts and figures are quite interesting. Although these ones are a little bit sad. So let me read these to you. A parent of children under 18 dies every 22 minutes in the UK. That's around 23,000 a year. This equates to around 111 children being bereaved of a parent every day. And one in 29 5 to 16 year olds have been bereaved of a parent or sibling. So if you think about it, that's probably a child in every average class. That's a lot of bereaved children in a class. And this is just about the death of parents and siblings, not grandparents or friends or extended community. So the amount of bereaved children in schools is probably much bigger. So really, we do need to be talking to children about death as they're experiencing the effects of it, whether we like it or not. Now, if you're a parent, you might be interested to find out what your child's school is learning about death. And you can ask, probably it's in their PSHE curriculum, and you can ask to see that and see what information they're being told. So you can continue that conversation at home. And it's done very matter-of-factly in school. It's not, they usually use life cycles and things to talk about death. They don't generally talk about the emotional side of it. You might want to do that. And then this one here, this slide gets me quite angry, actually. Children who've experienced the death of a parent, sibling or friend are more likely to have continued issues than their non-bereaved peers. So I'll let you read those for yourself. You can go through that in your own time. But basically, there's nothing really positive on there, is there? More likely to have serious illnesses, mental disorders, be excluded from school. You know, just for having somebody in their life died, it just seems very unfair. I wonder what your thoughts are on this, and maybe pause a little bit, stop the video and have a think about what your thoughts are about the effects of death having on a child. So as I said, I believe it's really important to talk about death to children. And I'm just going to go through and give you some top tips. So, OK, bear something in mind at this point. This might not be completely relevant to your role as a counsellor, but so many of us are connected to schools and communities and with our own families that I think it would be remiss of me not to talk about it. For me, it is part of a package. I'm a whole person, not just a counsellor, not just a parent, not just a person in the community. And to give you a little bit of context, I was on holiday recently and I met a lady who had an elderly family member who had recently died. She was really embarrassed telling me this story, but she didn't know how to tell her daughters that she died, so she didn't tell them. It happened during when we were in lockdown, so the family hadn't seen this elderly person for quite a while anyway, and her daughters were saying, you know, we've not seen this person. And so it was just the easy thing to do was continue to say we're not allowed to see that person and to tell them that they died. And so it kind of stayed with me for a little while. Why hadn't she told them? What kind of was stopping her? Did she not have the words? And the more I thought about it, I believe it boils down to the fact that she doesn't want her children to be sad. They were sad that they couldn't see them, and she didn't want them to be more sad that they were dead. And as parents, as adults, we don't want our children to be hurt, and we often try really hard to protect them from difficult things. This information would have been sad, and the kids would have been sad. But actually, we shouldn't try and protect our children from experiencing difficult feelings, because it's a skill for life. They're going to be feeling difficult feelings throughout their life. We should be supporting them through it and not avoiding it. So these are kind of my top tips for talking to children about popping your clogs. Just joking, death. So tell the truth. Don't lie. The truth comes out. Just tell the truth. Maybe not all the truth, maybe simply, but tell the truth and answer questions simply. They do not need the detailed answers that you think we need. And as we talk about age related understanding, they'll come back to things they don't understand when they go into that kind of next age bracket, I guess, and then something doesn't make sense, they'll ask for some more information. So yeah, keep it really simple. I mentioned this a little minute ago, but teach life cycles. So I've got some really great old-fashioned books that talk about life cycles. It's factual, not emotion. So they know that we are born, animals are born and they live. And there's various reasons why we might die, maybe an accident. If you're an animal, you might get stood on or eaten. You might just become old and die. Books could help illustrate that. There are movies out there with themes that talk about that. Somewhere within this presentation there'll be an opportunity to download some handouts. So all my handouts are just in one pack. I've made it quite easy, and I've given some book recommendations and movie recommendations. Now obviously have a look at it yourself, read the blurb about it and see if it's appropriate for you. I've kind of done a general overall list really on bereavement and death, that not everything will be age appropriate, so you have a little look what works for you. Movies are a great way to talk about death if your child's old enough to kind of understand that. Use and look for opportunities within daily life. When you see walk past a graveyard, you can say this is where people are buried when they die. When you walk past dead animals on the side of the road, you can point it out and say, oh, look at that hedgehog or whatever it is at the side of the road. Kids are fascinated in these things. And talk about how sad it might be when someone dies. We have a dog and she's getting quite old now, and we talk about how sad it will be when she dies. And they know that within the next 5 years or so, that's likely to happen. And we talk about how sad it will be and how we will cry a lot. And it's okay, we will cry together. So they're very aware of and death. We talk about it. So I'm not sure, I'm going to tell you another little story. I think I might have said a little bit about this in the bereavement presentation. This is like stage two of the conversation, and I'm not sure how we got onto the topic of cremation and burial with my children, but we kind of had this conversation, and then we met their grandma for lunch, and she's 83 and she's old, traditional old. And my eldest pipes up, he's 7, and said, "Grandma, are you being buried or burned when you die?" And she, as you can imagine, was a little aghast. But I explained to her that when she died, they would be very, very sad. But already knowing about burial and cremation and graveyards would make it less overwhelming. There's less new information to take in. So she shared her wishes with us and it made sense to them. And she did. She really talked about why she'd made the decision that she had made and what she wanted. And we went to see her their granddad's grave afterwards, and it all fit together and made sense. And I think that's a lovely opportunity that we have to talk about that with our children. So I encourage you to have those conversations, as shocking as they may seem to those of you that may not have thought about doing this before. Okay, so that's my top tips on how to talk to children about death. I'm sure there's lots of other things out there as well, but it's a good starting point. We're going to talk about age-related understanding of death. Now, this might not be exact for every age, but it's a really good kind of table to get an idea of it. So as we start talking to children about death, you may realise that their understanding isn't concrete. Their understanding grows, which means it isn't one conversation, which is what I said earlier. It's a conversation that gets repeated and added to as they get older and they start making sense of things. So let's look at 0 to 2 years. While no concept of death, the child will be very aware of the loss of a carer, and the child can also sense grief from others. So bereaved toddlers can be observed actively seeking the deceased person. For instance, if granddad spends a lot of time prior to death in the shed, the toddler might persistently return to investigate the shed in hope of finding him there, because that's their connection. They can't verbalise it. And then age 2 to 5 years, aware of difference between alive and dead, children may think dead people continue to do everyday things or that death is temporary. There's been a dead hedgehog on our walk to school, which was incredibly interesting for 5 and 7 year old. And my 5 year old would say things like, when it wakes up, or shall we get it some food? And I would say things like, dead is forever, still dead, it can't eat. So she's 5 and still not quite grasped that dead is forever. But you know, she'll get there, but kind of bear that in mind. And yeah, I've had to repeat myself quite a lot of times. The hedgehog is still dead. 5 to 9 years. So a child may develop the concept that death is permanent and irreversible, and they may personify death. For example, it might be a monster or a person. Yeah, death's a weird concept, isn't it? Really, so it might become a person to them. I guess it is in a lot of movies as well. So they'll start to know that everyone dies. They may be very curious about the physical process of death and what happens after a person dies. They may fear their own death because of uncertainty of what happens to them after they die. Fear of the unknown, loss of control, and separation from family and friends can be the school-aged child's main source of anxiety and fears related to death, which is definitely my 7 year old's definitely in that stage of I'm really going to miss you, and what happens if. Yeah, that they're hard conversations to have. So 9 to 11 years, a child is developing a more realistic understanding of the concept of death. They may show an interest in their biological aspects, and also in the spiritual aspects, a sense of their own mortality may develop. So they might start wondering about heaven and hell and what happens. And maybe as a family, you want to take advantage of that. And what do you as a family believe happened to you? And I wonder whether children that are part of families that follow a faith or religion may be better informed about death generally, as all faiths have a belief about the afterlife that's taught as part of the faith or religion. Perhaps there is less fear and more certainty. So that's definitely one to think about, actually, with the children that you're working with, and maybe your children if you have them. It's always important to help to understand what people believe. So adolescents, they have a full understanding of death, also of spiritual and abstract elements, and are more aware of long-term consequences of death, increased influence of peer group, and also tension between dependence and independence. Generally, I guess, especially if you're a parent to an adolescent, that might resonate with you. Yeah, so have a look through that. Maybe think of some children, young people, if you're a parent, which one does your child fit into? Or if you're working with a bereaved child at the moment, you know, does this knowledge make any difference to your work, maybe? Does it sort of, oh, aha, yes, this makes sense why this five-year-old keeps asking me this question. And bear in mind, they're not exact, as you know, my 5-6 year old is still in that 2 to 5 years bracket. Okay, let's move on. So let's look at developmental issues regarding bereavement. There's some factors we need to bear in mind when working with children. So they have an immature thinking capacity. They have an egocentric views and magical thinking. So I worked with a family once who had told their five-year-old a very grandiose and elaborate story about where her loved one was. And it was very difficult to help her initially, as nothing was concrete. And in the end, I had to encourage the family to tell her the truth about where this person was, or maybe wasn't. Yeah, that was really hard piece of work. So difficulties comprehending the concept of death, as we've just discussed, possibly lack of control over their options, lack of information or knowledge, like I shared regarding being a child, not being able to attend a funeral. There's lots of things I didn't really understand and I didn't know what to ask. Less able to handle stress and lack of language to communicate to others how they are feeling and coping. Okay, so grief is a natural process. It does not necessarily require professional intervention. We looked at that on the bereavement presentation. But here we are, again, looking at how we can intervene professionally and how we can be useful. So I have helped many grieving children, so it obviously does need help at times. And parents often bring children for therapy as they are struggling to cope with the child's reactions to grief. So we're going to look at those now. Child's reactions to grief. So I'm not going to read all of those. You can look through them. So children often can't say what is going on for them. They will act out or misbehave. So there's a list of behavioural things there. Maybe they've got naughty, acting out. They may get ill or have similar symptoms to the deceased, or reoccurring bladder infections or tummy problems, for example. And it's probably the stress in their bodies trying to find a way out. And when I assess bereaved families, I consider these possible reactions. I ask about eating and sleeping and behaviour. Not that I aim to fix it or make it better. Quite often in the work, I don't draw attention to it, but I hold that information in my mind. And usually by the end of the work, those symptoms have either really reduced or that they're not there anymore. So a parent might tell me that their daughter is really struggling to sleep when before the death they would go to sleep no problem. So do you remember when we looked at euphemisms and I said about telling a grandma's gone to sleep rather than grandma's died? So this girl may not be sleeping because she heard that grandma went to sleep and isn't going to wake up, and she doesn't want to go to sleep because she's afraid she won't wake up. Okay, this is not stuff I'm making up. This stuff really happens, that children get just the wrong end of the stick. They hear things and then it really affects them. And the parent just wouldn't have thought. And this is why families often do need some intervention, because they just don't, they're dealing with everything and they can't see those seemingly small things. And so they need the professionals to kind of come and get this big perspective of everything and ask all the questions. So that's behavioural and physical. On to thoughts and feelings now. Again, just read those in your own time. Pause the video if you want to. There's some thoughts and feelings that a bereaved child might be experiencing. When parents are grieving too, do they make time and space to listen to the thoughts and feelings of their children, or are they just trying their level best to get through the day? You'll know in your own lives when something bad's happened, you know, really something really hard has happened. It's just enough to cook the food and get up and get the kids out than to sort of make time to say, and how are things for you? And that can be a real challenge, and that's why parents often need our support. Okay. So working with bereaved families. So notice I say families and not children, because when you're working with a bereaved child, you have to see them as part of a community or a system. We will look at the child's needs first, and then we'll go on to look at the parent and what they might need. The first thing we're going to look at is the 12 needs of a bereaved child. So you can search for this, and sometimes it comes up as a bereavement charter, sort of same information, and it can be a really lovely list of 12 things. Now, for the sake of this, I've kind of changed it around a bit and split it up into three categories. So these 12 needs, I think, come under three titles. So information, feelings, and grief. So we're going to look at information first. If you follow these points within your work with children and young people and the advice that you give, then I believe you can't go too wrong, really. Everything's in here. As a counsellor, we aren't necessarily going to be involved in all these points directly, but we can help caregivers and give reassurance when they are feeling out of their depth and lost of how to support their child. Part of my role when I worked for a bereavement project was as a consultation role. And so quite often we would get social workers, health visitors, teachers, head teachers phoning for advice. And so quite often I would focus my attention on going through these 12 needs of a bereaved child, because usually whatever they were struggling with, the answer was in this list. And so that's why I think this is really important. So, information. A child needs clear, comprehensive information about the death. A child needs reassurance that they are not responsible for the death. So, for example, the argument that they had with their dad the night before they died wasn't the cause of the death. A child needs reassurance that they will be cared for. So, mum may be no longer be able to take them to school, so who does that? Time needs to be taken to cover these bases. And it might be something really seemingly small for us. Who takes him to football practice now, or who brushes their hair? These sort of little things are big things for children. A child needs safe companions who respond to their questions. So I wonder what sort of questions a child might ask, probably the kind that makes a parent feel uncomfortable. So they might ask all about the death, who, what, when, where, why, because they're trying to make sense of it. And it isn't necessarily an emotional factor for them at this point. They just want the questions answering. So neurodiverse children tend to want to know even more information than that. What happens when you die? What happens to your body, your skin, details about decomposition? And it can be really hard for a parent or caregiver to talk about this because it is emotional for them. The questions are likely to feel a bit hit and miss. Questions asked at an unexpected and possibly inappropriate time, although I would argue that questions aren't at an inappropriate time. It's just they make us feel uncomfortable. So really think about that, the information. Think about any cases you're working with where perhaps more information needs to be given so that they can understand. If you think children have very little control over their lives, maybe pause the video at this point if something's resonating with you right now and see that thought through. What does that child need to know to help them feel a bit better? Now, feelings. This is probably where you all feel, for your counsellors, you might feel this is your area of expertise and it's what we do well. So a child needs to be allowed to express feelings and then have their fears and anxieties soothed. A child needs to have someone who will listen attentively so their feelings will be acknowledged and respected. A child needs their thoughts and feelings validating. This is a normal reaction. A child needs help gaining perspective on their emotions. So the whirlpool of grief can be useful here. And I have used that a lot with children. That's back as your handout in the last presentation. So it's not always possible for a caregiver to do this when they're struggling to manage their own feelings as well. And this is often what I have seen, that the parent just can't provide this space and support for the child. So there's two ways here. You can support the parent to give the support to the child, or you can support the child as well. And it might be you might need to do some work with the school as well to help them understand if their knowledge on bereavement is limited. And maybe there's some opportunity for you to go and deliver some training in school to talk about these things. Use the 12 needs as a plan. And there you go. You've got some training that you can deliver. Let's move on to the next slide, which is grief. Similar to feelings, but more specifically, grief. So a child needs to see other people grieve and learn how people grieve in the group they belong to. Being aware of diversity and different cultures in your area might be useful here. What is normal for this family? So quite often I would see families who would come in and they'd say, oh no, we've not cried in front of the child. We were just trying to keep a brave face. And I can understand that. I can understand you don't want your child to see you crying or being very, very sad. But then from the child's point of view, they're not seeing what it's like to grieve. They don't know how to grieve. They don't know that it's okay to cry. And they're not seeing grieving as a normal thing to do when somebody's died. So bear that in mind. A child needs to be involved and included in open grieving. And this can make families feel very uncomfortable as they don't want to grieve in front of the children or don't want them to go to the funeral, which is totally understandable. And parents might need some support in just talking this through and what it would be like and how to manage it. A child needs permission to continue with interests and activities. So this is the oscillation of grief we talked about in the last presentation. It's okay to live and it's okay to cry, and children are great at doing this oscillation. And then a child needs opportunity to say goodbye to the person who has died and have opportunities to remember the deceased throughout their lives. So it might not be appropriate for them to attend a funeral, but they still need to say goodbye. So perhaps think about how you can support or facilitate this. So a child I worked with hadn't attended the funeral or visited the grave. There was a really weird family kind of connection, which made mum kind of on the outskirts of it. But with mum's permission, I found the grave and my young client wrote a beautiful card and we delivered it to the grave together. And we had a really lovely time looking at the grave, saying goodbye. I've got a really beautiful memory of that piece of work. Interestingly, the work ended quite soon after that. I thought she would need longer to kind of process and grieve, and I'd been putting off taking her to the grave because I'm a counsellor, it's not my job to take a child to a grave, and I don't know if that's allowed. And actually that is what she needed. She just needed somebody to support her to say goodbye to this person that she loved and kind of wasn't really allowed to love anymore. It was really a lovely thing that we did together and taught me a lot. Okay, so that is the 12 needs of a bereaved child. In the handout, it's there as a full list of 12. So print it out and keep it by your side when you're assessing families or talking to professionals about grieving children. There will be something on this list that's missing that the child needs help with. I would put money on it. Let's now talk about the parent. So the function of the surviving parent is the most powerful predictor of a child's adjustments to the death of a parent. Now that is to do with another parent dying, and this presentation isn't just about a parent dying. However, I like this quote because I agree with it, and it makes it clear that a child's recovery or ability to process their grief is reliant on their parent or caregiver. It's also very unfair because if you're a parent of a grieving child, you're grieving as well, and you may have lost your partner, somebody close to you, and that's going to be really hard to be that strong person for your child as well. So often the adults would suck it up and not grieve, they show a brave face, but what they are doing was not modelling how to grieve, as I've already said, or express emotions or give permission to talk about it. And I've lost count of the times I have said to a parent, you're asking a six-year-old to engage with a new and unknown adult and talk about really difficult things, yet you won't do this for yourself. Obviously, I don't say that as the starting point, but quite often that is the last thing I have to say because they're just not getting it, that they need the help as well. And it can be a little bit of a wake-up call to parents, but use that phrase carefully. Okay, so let's look at the good enough grieving parent. How do we help this grieving parent? So psychoeducation might be some part of your work. Now, well, let me just go back a little bit. I don't know the way in which you work. You might have your own model, and that's absolutely fine. Stay with the model and the way that you work and fit some of this around it. The model I used to use and still would use in private practice is that I meet the parent first and I would do a couple of assessment sessions. We were allowed to leak out the assessment session and make it a little bit longer so we could do some of this work with the parent before we met with the child, because I believe that once you meet the child, then you can't go back and do work with the parent, because that would be crossing boundaries. So bear some of this in mind, but I'm not suggesting you have to change the model of the way that you work. But this is how I would work. So I would do some psychoeducation. I would share information, share books and movies, the list that I've given you. I would encourage them to go to counselling if applicable. And I might even teach them some theory, some whirlpool of grief, the oscillation, to help them make sense of what was happening in their family's lives. I might tell them some home truths. As I've said, I would perhaps do a longer assessment period. Couldn't do the therapeutic work with the parent. That was another service, but we could leak out that assessment so we could support the parent as much as we could. And maybe some of your work is just holding that parent while they have some difficult conversations themselves with their child. So I worked with a family who referred their 7-year-old daughter. Her 3-week-old sister died when she was 3, so it was a long time ago. She was referred due to her difficult behaviour. Our sessions contained a lot of hospital role play, sick dolls and nurses, etc. Meanwhile, I had given Mum the very hard message about needing her own therapy and fed back what I thought was going on in the work. Eventually Mum was ready to listen and engaged in her own therapy and was emotionally available for her child, my client, again. And when I look back, I realised I'd been holding them both while they worked it out. And at the end of the work, Mum wrote me a letter explaining that she had lost one daughter and was about to lose another, but I helped her find her way back to her. And it just goes to show that I really didn't think I was meant to be doing the work with the child. I knew it was Mum that needed the support. I knew the key lay within her, but she just wasn't ready. And what I could do was meet with this child, keep the family within our service, keep sort of saying the same things and reminding and feeding back and working as part of a team until that family were ready. She was ready to get some counselling and face up to her part in this. So holding is a really important role that we might have as well. We're going to talk about assessments now. And again, I'm not saying you should change the way you work, but just bear in mind these are some of the things that I might do in my assessment. It might be useful for you to go back to the bereavement presentation and look at the assessment slide there. All the factors in that you may consider will still be relevant, but I've added in, well, you can see what I've added into this assessment now, the child's reactions. You can ask about euphemisms as well if you want, or you can listen out for them. Probably don't need to ask because you'll hear it within the conversation. And remember that you are assessing the child and their family. If you just ask about the child, you might miss some vital information about the family. So I worked with a family whose grandparent had died. The child's mum had entered a very deep and dark depression as a result of this news or event, and she wouldn't or couldn't get out of bed. She would sob for hours, and the child said the child didn't need help with his grandparent dying, but the fact that he was losing his mum just was not really available. Her reactions had totally freaked him out. Now, I could have easily missed that because it wasn't something the mum was generally wanting to talk about. I think she was quite ashamed and embarrassed by the time she'd come to me. She was sharing information about the general grief, the child and their reactions. And it wasn't until I'd said, "And how has it been for you? How are you managing this?" that then it all came out that actually she wasn't managing it. And so then I knew the work that I had to do was helping the child overcome these kind of quite traumatic experience for him. Seeing his mum cry so much was really shocking for him. So yes, do a family assessment. Okay, that's assessment. Oh, well, on the bottom there, I've put why now as well. That's always a really good question to ask. Why now? Why not last week? Why not last month? Why not in 6 months' time? What is it about now that you need the work? So the work, this is probably the bit you've been waiting for. What is grief counselling with children and young people? So it could be one of these things. So it could be whatever of the 12 needs isn't being met. It could be the work is a place to remember. So I've done lots of memory activities with children. I think I'll come on to that later and we talk about some ideas. Maybe it's a space to feel uncomfortable feelings because school or home, they don't feel safe enough to talk about uncomfortable feelings because parent might cry, brother, sister might cry, school's too busy. Your job might be to help them say goodbye, to write a letter, to take it to the grave, to burn it, to help create memories and memory points at home. Might be some psychoeducation for parents. And the work probably will involve some sort of creative work because children generally want to be doing things as well. So those are some of the things I think bereavement work with children, this is some of the things you could be doing. Okay, so this is something quite cool that I came up with that I think you'll quite like. It's called a contracting box. Okay, so I used to find it quite difficult contracting with children because I just wasn't sure how much they understood about what contracting was. So I've put a link on the bottom there to my Facebook page, the Creative Supervision one, and there's a video there that explains really well the contracting box. I demonstrate it. I think also I've put the link on the handout as well. But I'm going to talk you through it. So I have a box and I have all these items that go into the box. And this is me explaining to them what contracting is. And this is not just to do with bereavement. You can do this with any child, but I just thought you might really like this and find it quite useful. So the box symbolised the room, and we talked through the different items that they are going to put in the box. So there were some figures, and I had two figures. But you can have a whole load of them and get them to choose one for themselves, and you can then choose one for you, or you can get them to choose one for you, see how they view you. That would be interesting. So we say that we're both going to be in this box, and then there's a clock which says then we're going to be here the same time and the same day every week, and that your parent or caregiver knows that and they'll bring you, and that you're going to come for six sessions. That's what you're offering. And then I'd have a key, and I would say that this key represents the work and the notes that you might do or that I might keep, and these are going to be kept in a safe place, and no one would see them until the end of the work, and then at the end we would decide what we would do with them. And then I had a little purple purse. It was lovely. It got a zip, and this was to explain confidentiality. So this is what I said. Everything that happened in the session would be kept in the purse and zipped closed at the end. If you want to tell the people you know about the session, then you could unzip it and say whatever you liked. But I wouldn't. I wouldn't tell parents and I wouldn't tell teachers. However, if you told me you were being hurt, then I would unzip the purse and tell my manager the parts to do with the hurt. And she would tell us what we would need to do so that hurt wouldn't happen anymore. And that's the way that I used to explain confidentiality. And they used to really understand that because it was something they could see was visual, but also this zipping, this choice. They could open it whenever they wanted, and I couldn't. I just open it a little bit and take out the bits that related to the hurt and not anything else. So there are probably other things that you could add in as well. And if you do find other things to add in, send me an email and let me know what you're going to put in. I just wanted to keep it really simple. Anyway, that box would be in our room each week so they would understand. If a child particularly liked it, we might do it at the beginning of every session if it helped as a kind of starting point. But you work in the way that you work with that. Okay. I'm going to go through now some ideas. Now, I tend to work quite creatively, so a lot of these ideas will be creative. I'm not going to go into too much detail because I think that would probably be another presentation. So I generally don't have a repertoire of things I do with children, young people. I do work quite intuitively and organically, so I don't have ready-made tools to apply as such. So I don't say, right, I do this at the beginning or this at the end. We just see, but I definitely have sort of some things that I call to more than others. So here are just some of my kind of ideas, really. I tend to introduce the client to the space we're using. So if I'm in my own therapy room and it's full of different items, we'll just go through, look in all the drawers, look in all the boxes, and I would show, because they don't know they can do painting or drawing or Play-Doh. So I show them all the items. When I've worked peripatetically, so that's the word, I take a suitcase into school or a centre, I'd keep everything in the suitcase and I kind of open it up and have a little space for everything. And so we go and stand by the suitcase and I show them everything in there. They could do these things, these workbooks, whatever, go through everything. Because I like to work non-directively, so then the next session I can say, well, you've seen everything there is to do, what would you like to do today? What would you like to play with? Or if you're not sure, what are you in the mood for? So here are some of the ideas. So for getting to know clients, you might play Jenga. It's quite a common tool list. Put some questions on. So I might number them 1, 2, 3. You pick a one, and one might say, tell me how you feel, how you felt today. Or number two might be a favourite thing, a favourite colour. And three would be something else. Just a way to get going, I guess, but you can be quite clever with some of your questions. I always answer to, I think if you play a game like that, it's important to share, and I think children and young people need slightly more disclosure than an adult needs. So I would answer the questions that they ask me. You might have some assessment worksheets that you might create about feelings. I had one with body outlines and they'd say how much of them felt a certain thing. So there's plenty of resources and tools out there, have a look, but an assessment worksheet can be a good starting point too. And the whirlpool of grief, if you think they're old enough to understand that, and that could lead on to an activity of them designing their own or drawing or painting their own. So under helping them to remember, if that's the work that you're going to do, you can decorate a candle that they can light, a photo frame, you can do some pebbles, a pillowcase. A pillowcase is a really lovely idea that I did with a child that I think that couldn't sleep. So we got some fabric pens and paints and they painted this pillowcase, and then they went to bed at night, and it was just a lovely place to remember, really kind of soothing and nurturing activity. You can make a memory box. I've not ever made memory boxes, actually, but I've encouraged families to do that together. Get a special box and put things in at home. And we've talked about that. If you go online and search it, you'll find instructions for that, as well as a memory jar using salt and chalks. That's a lovely activity to do. Again, search for that. It's on there. I think Winston's Wish. I've got a worksheet on the memory jars. Children really enjoy doing that. And then helping to say goodbye, you might encourage them to do some writing, some poetry, write a letter, a diary entry. Teenagers maybe, or the tweenager age, might want to buy them a journal that they can decorate and they can write some of their feelings in. And then some of your work will obviously be about helping them express feelings through drawing, painting. You could have a box or an envelope with feelings inside, feelings outside. You can use clay, sand, Play-Doh. You can make a puppet, do a collage. Just quite a lot of ideas there of things that you can do. And again, you can use these ideas with any work, not just bereavement work. So as we said before, children have often been excluded from the decisions the adults have made regarding the bereavement. So you can ask them about your work together and find out what they want to do and how they want to spend the time with you. Empower them and give them choice. So I might suggest, I think you want help saying goodbye, or I think you need some information, and then they'll either agree with me or not. And if you have a child that's not really very forthcoming, you might write some little cards, feelings, memories, goodbye, whatever, and choose which one would you like to do today. Just to try and empower them, trying to get them to have a choice. Okay. So we're here already, the final breath. So as a result of this learning today, what are you going to do now? what next? So more specific training, maybe. Watch a grief movie. Buy some children's books, the ones I've recommended on the handout, maybe. Maybe make some changes to your parenting. Maybe you start to talk about death more. And maybe you make some changes to your work as well. I've really enjoyed putting this presentation together for you. I'm in the Facebook group if you have any questions. And please see my biography on Counselling Tutor for more information about me and what I can offer you. And our last slide now. Don't forget to download your CPD certificate. So for further information, links and resources, please refer to the lecture delivery page below this video. Thank you for your time. Thank you for being here. And don't forget to claim your CPD certificate for this presentation. Thank you.